Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's national anthem will be offered by award-winning Nashville recording artist Ricochet.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the
One. Just make sure I got a hot dog and make sure I got my t-shirt on.
They do have some little quirks. I don't know that they own up to all of them.
Five wide, there's one outside. Good, good. Keep shoving, keep shoving. I don't know where you're at.
I think I'll go home and slam my head in the door repeatedly.
Don't do that like I'm mad at last night, remember?
It's 2 minutes after 7 o'clock here on the East Coast, and it is time for Race Talk Live. Welcome in, everybody. I am Steve Conley, stat guy here on Race Talk Live, founded by Kate Moss, and alongside of our co-host. Hopefully he's going to work tonight. You plan on working tonight, Mike?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of open for a vacation, but why the hell not?
We'll get something out of you. We have got a jam. You know, it's not jam-packed tonight. It is overflowing to the point of like the pool on the Titanic. It is. We're overflowing with stuff tonight. We've got so much stuff going on. It is insane. We will get to the big white elephant that is sitting in the corner of the room that is known as Joey Logano and Matt Kenseth. But we have got a ton of news. There's a break this afternoon involving Kurt Busch and Stuart Haas. Yes, it's going to be hot when he hits the track at any point in time. But he's got himself a new co-sponsor. That will be on the car starting at Martinsville here, and he's got himself a new contract with Stuart Haas Racing. Coming up at the bottom of the hour from Richard Childress Racing, we have Ray Wright, who is the front tire carrier for the number 27 of Paul Menard. So he's going to join us to talk about life on pit road, training that he has to go through, even some of his time sitting on the baseball field, because he used to play college baseball at LSU, which has kind of a fun story behind that. And we will also talk about his program that he has at RCR called Pit Stops for Hope. But Mike, first, your thoughts on Joey Logano and Matt Kenseth.
You know, and I've been tossing this around the last few days, and that we actually had a question on our Facebook page. And I'll even ask you now, are we past the era where moving somebody for the win is an acceptable form of racing? I don't know. I haven't quite made up my mind on that. You know, I can kind of see on Joey's side where Matt blocked him a couple of times, and he did. And, you know, even when I was racing and when I'm not, my rule of thumb is block at your own risk. Blocking is an acceptable form of racing. But there, you have to know there comes a time whenever the guy you're blocking is going to get sick of you and move you. But watching how Joey did it, Joey could have gone a couple of different ways around the track, but lap cars definitely did kind of take that up. So I can't make my mind up to say who is more in the right than the other. Obviously, Matt Kenseth needed that win, and he still needs one to stay in this chase. But I can't quite pick a good and a bad in this scenario.
You know, and I tend to agree with you about having a hard time picking between this because, I mean, we've heard Joey Logano say it before. He said, if you block me, all right, you do it once, but the second time, you're probably going to be facing the wrong way. We heard a lot of drivers say that over the past several years, especially when we get the tracks like coming up this weekend at Talladega. You block me, you better get prepared to get spun out. And we know the whole race long, all 400 miles at Kansas, the only place Joey Logano was successful on the track was that high line. He was ridiculously fast running right up there against the wall. And as soon as Matt took that line away, there was nothing he could do. He couldn't make the move to the bottom. He said his car was too tight getting into the corner and way too loose coming off. So he needed the high line. So Matt did exactly what he had to. But, I mean, we saw a couple iffy moves. You move to the bottom to run down there on the apron and coming right back up across the track, right sliding right across his nose. That's a tricky proposition. And normally I don't agree with the big mahogany building down in Daytona or anybody that's in it. But Brian France said this week on SiriusXM NASCAR radios with Dave Moody that he was completely fine with what Joey Logano did, said that he needed to make sure that he kept basically Matt Kenseth out of the way. He was blocked, and you get blocked and you get spun out. I agree wholeheartedly with Brian France and with what Joey Logano did. And I totally figure that what goes around comes around. And if Matt Kenseth does not move on in the next round, we're going to see our first chase contender as we get later on into the chase find themselves getting paid back.
Well, and we expected this a lot last year, if you remember, who can forget the whole Brad K. Jeff Gordon incident. I don't know if Matt Kenseth is necessarily going to take him out. You can bet if he gets eliminated, he's going to make it a lot harder for Joey Logano to win the championship. I don't think he's going to intentionally wreck it. But if you watch that camera shot of Matt's rear bumper looking at Joey, I mean, they were only blocked bumpers for maybe a second, and his rear end was already up off the ground by the time they started making that turn. Once he hit him, I'm pretty sure that would have screwed Matt's corner up no matter what. He blocked, and that bit him in the end. And I have all the respect in the world for Matt Kenseth. I really do. You know, driving that high line, his car was not supposed to work that way. He was loose as hell, and he made that car work. And, you know, not many drivers can really do that. But, yeah, he made a bad move. Just because the spotter says you're clear doesn't mean, hey, you got, like, 2 inches to the next car. Just come up anyway.
Yeah, and at that point in track, and we've heard spotters say it before. I mean, when Kate was with us, we had spotters on a lot of times, and they said that point in the track, in any track that just past the start finish line, entering turn one is one of the hardest places to see because you're kind of looking down and away, so you can't really give a clear. So it's a tricky scenario, and definitely one that is going to play out as we move along. And this is what NASCAR wanted. This is what the fans wanted. They wanted the drama that came along with the chase. If we were going to have this chase, we were going to have these types of issues. And I'll tell you what, Kansas was not a stellar race up until about the last 20 laps or so. And it's had that problem over several years. Yes, you might have had a few more green flag laps passes for the lead, but overall it was just a okay race. Joey Logano and Matt Kenseth turned it into a pretty stellar ending. Unfortunately, with 5 laps to go, we're not talking about the racing. We're talking about the contact. And that's unfortunate because it takes away from what was going to be a good ending, whether they were going to go side by side, whether lap cars were going to cause problems, Logano was going to fall back because, like he said, after the race, his car was good on the first handful of laps and then towards the end of a run. Matt Kenseth was good at the start of the run and then progressively got better. So it was a fine balance. Who knows what we're going to see? And we won't. But I can tell you one thing. The two best cars pretty much all season long right now, one is sitting at the top of the point standings, the other one is sitting at the bottom. And it could be a big problem as we move through throughout the rest of the chase. And I would figure don't expect Joey Logano to get too much drafting help from that Toyota that used to be a big fan of Joey Logano.
So he says. I mean, you know, he said he was a huge supporter of him till that. And I do expect, you know, heads to kind of calm down and cool out once once we get towards the weekend. I know he's never going to forget it, but I don't think he's going to be as vengeful, I guess you could say. But
right.
And it's not just the 22-20 drama. I have a feeling, had Matt not blocked him, I really do think Joey Logano would have got around him and then just kind of started going away. I really do. Joey Logano was just that good pretty much all day long. You know, Kenseth, I think he actually led the most laps, but Logano was good the most pretty much all day. But it wasn't just that drama, because then right before that happened, we had drama with Martin Truex Jr. and Kevin Harvick both getting pit road penalties under the green, so they both ended up going a lap down and ended up fighting each other for that last lap. That caution is what got Martin Truex back on the lead lap and able to gain a couple spots.
Yeah, and Kevin Harvick talked about that, saying that they were looking for pretty much a top five run, and they were going to get it. There's no question about that. He said they were really actually lucky to finish where they did. So there's two guys that, and I mean, right now we are looking at, I think, a 13 points from second down to 12th. There are not a lot of points. No, 18 points from second, Denny Hamlin down to 12th. So this weekend,
I was just saying, not to mention Kevin Harvick did that final restart with a broken shifter. So that definitely made things very hard on him. But
yeah, and you know, it's kind of funny that that you mentioned that, because I think that had to have been one of the more entertaining things that we've seen recently. Kevin Harvick coming down pit road, has a shifter in his hand, pulls into his pit box, and just kind of throws it out the window. But as they talked about on the broadcast, that he still had a couple inches there on the bottom of the shifter that he could reach down and grab. But it still wasn't going to be pleasant. And, I mean, we've seen times where drivers have lost their shifter or it broke off, broke in half or something, and by the time they got done with the race, their hands were torn up, even from their gloves, from having to reach down and grab a scalding hot metal shifter. So that's definitely a scenario that in mechanical issues are something that we're going to have to deal with. But you are listening to Race Talk Live. My name is Steve Conley, stat guy, along with Mike Reed, our social media guy. This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free trial, visit Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. And Race Talk Live, founded by Kate Moss, is brought to you by the CLNS Radio Network every Wednesday night at 7. Now, at the bottom of the hour, we do have Ray Wright coming up, going to talk to us about life on pit road, which, I mean, we've seen so many things happen on pit road. It's going to be real kind of interesting to see what he has to share, especially at chase time. And Paul Menard was part of the chase to start with, and now we're going to kind of see how they work on pit road and with their driver going through and racing the chasers as being a non-chaser. So be interesting to see what he has to say there. Now let's dive into this whole thing about the announcement today from Stuart Haas Racing and Kurt Busch, because they were looking at where Kurt Busch was going to end up next year and what his future held, because he basically didn't have a contract for next year. Now Gene Haas has made no question, or he has not hidden the fact that he wants Kurt Busch at Stuart Haas Racing. wanted him in the 41, and now he's got him. Now, the details of the contracts, like more often than not, are not fully released, so we don't have an exact time frame or what all the details are in regards to it. But Kurt is back for a multi-year extension with Stuart Haas, and the biggest thing they're bringing on board is Monster Energy is going from the Xfinity series to a part-time. They will be on the 41 as the primary sponsor for 17 races as a primary and 18 races as a secondary sponsorship. So they're going to get the hood for 17 and the quarter panels for 18. And I mean, really, if you look at it, Monster Energy has, they've had the longtime affiliation with Kyle, so the Busch brothers, so there's no surprise there. The biggest question that fans have right now is what is going to happen in 2017? We all know Clint Bowyer is going to Stuart Haas Racing to take over that 14, and it's all expected, and the contracts, from what I understand, have been signed that 5-Hour Energy is coming along. You have got energy drink conflicts going on between two cars on the same team. Now, Gene Haas has said some of these things are talked about ahead of time, so obviously something wouldn't have been worked out, or they wouldn't have made this announcement. But we'll see the 41 Monster Energy Haas Automation Chevrolet. The first part of that, first part of the sponsorship comes up at Martinsville here in a couple weeks. Kurt Busch says he's very happy to be back with Stuart Haas Racing and proud to take Monster Energy to the Sprint Cup Series. He's won 3 races and 3 poles since joining Stuart Haas Racing, and he does have a couple wins in the Xfinity Series with Monster Energy. So it seems to be like it's going to be a good partnership. Thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, all right, as far as the sponsorship goes, I mean, do we know if this is a multi-year deal with Monster? Because I almost don't think it will be. You know, for those of you that don't know, you know, Gene Haas, he is going to be fielding at least, I have to believe it's 2 F1 cars next year. I got a feeling that's partly why he sought out sponsorship as far as, you know, Kurt Busch's car, because Haas Automation has been sponsoring Kurt Busch. Now Haas Automation is going to have to be sponsoring part of his F1 team. So that kind of makes sense to me as far as that goes. I don't think you can have 2 different companies that have the same product on, you know, on 2 different cars on the same team. So that'll definitely be interesting. But I'm not surprised that Kurt Busch is back in the 41 with a contract extension. We know Gene Haas likes him, and I don't think Tony Stewart dislikes him. You know, when he first brought him on, I was a little hesitant and a little sketchy on that because I didn't think Tony Stewart was really for it. Gene Haas kind of went on his own on that one. But I think it really has helped the team out. And with the way Kurt Busch is running, I know he's not running as good as the 4, Kevin Harvick, but he's still right there, and he's still in this chase. You know, he's one of the guys that's, I'd say, in the yellow because he's not green yet, but he's not red. So, you know, I'm happy to see him in the 41. I'm happy.
Yeah, it's going to be – it's definitely a good partnership. It's a team that when it was first put together, you had the ultimate form of characters basically on his team, from the car owner, from Tony Stewart, with Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick and Danica Patrick. So it was a – I can't even think of a really good word. Borgman is not working today. But characteristics between 4 drivers, and a lot of people did not think that was going to mesh very well. And surprisingly – it's done quite well. Kevin's obviously picked up a championship. Kurt had his problems. Obviously, there's no question about that. We knew about it. It's been well documented. He's overcome it, and he seems like he's become a better person because of it and a better race car driver, and the results on the track show it.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, when this group came about, you know, Danica Patrick, Tony Stewart, Kevin Harvick, Kurt Busch, 3 out of those 4 have historically been known as being kind of hotheads. But what really – well, I mean, come on, they really have. But honestly, I think what has kind of brought this team together and kind of calmed it down, yes, Kurt Busch had his issues at the beginning of the year. But I think a lot of it had to actually do with the tragedies that Tony Stewart's been facing the last couple of years. You know, we've really seen that team come together probably more than it reminds me almost of when Hendrick had that tragedy, that plane crash. Watching a team come together like that, and it's changed pretty much every driver and team member on that team.
You know, you make a good point. We've seen it a lot in NASCAR, that any type of tense situation, tragedy, whatever you want to put it, that it all kind of snowballs into a, we're here, we're going to build you up, and you're going to become better of it. And that's definitely been the case with Stewart Haas Racing. They have not been without their struggles. PR people at Stewart Haas Racing, give them sainthood, because they have dealt with things that very, very few people could deal with and have prospered, for lack of a better term for it. They have grown. They've won races. They've won championships. They've become fan favorites. And I think now there are some things I would say even in the personal world that is done with that. I mean, you look at Kevin Harvick, his family now, he's not that old, I don't even want to use this term, but I'm going to, ironhead. He's hard-headed. There's no question about that. But he's more fun and he's more personable, it seems like, as he's developed over these last two or three years. The things that Kurt has gone through, his new, I don't know, if I think he's married, new wife, I can't remember. So personal...
I don't think
personal conflicts.
Married.
Is he not married? Is he engaged? I can never remember what Kurt's marital status is at this point in time. I don't really keep up with that too terribly much. But whatever it is, you see, whether it's his girlfriend, his fiance, or his wife, whichever one she is, at his side, and you see a brightness and you see some smiles, you see some happiness with Kurt when he's around the racetrack. He's a little more joking. He's still dead serious when you talk to him about the race car. And I think that's one of the things that he's been able to do is once he gets in the race car, he's 100% focused. He knows he has a deal locked in place. He knows he has an owner that supports him. He knows he has a co-owner that's a friend and supporting him as well in Tony Stewart. And he's grown to have some really good teammates that work well with him. And Kevin and Danica, they speak highly of them. I mean, they race them hard, and they all have – this team has meshed with the most unique characteristics and circumstances surrounding it, but it's managed to work well, and I think that's one of the reasons that you have corporate partners that are coming on board like Monster. You've got some of these other ones that are hanging around that are Stewart Haas Racing – Tony's personal sponsors that are jumping on the cars to help out at times. So they obviously would not do that if it wasn't right for them. And it's not just about winning races, but it is definitely about the people, because you have to put them out in front of the public, speak about the product. Kurt, Kevin, Tony, Danica have all done it very well. And I think this is just one stepping stone. And when you bring Clint Bowyer into it in 2017, you have one of the most unique characteristics or characters in the garage that is exceptional with sponsors. The fans like him for the most part, unless you're probably a Jeff Gordon fan, you're probably still steamed at him, but
we never forget, man.
No, race fans do not forget. And, so that's definitely another one, and it's going to be fun to see what he brings, and he gets into a car that has a solid foundation, because let's face it, Clint has not been in the most solid foundation cars when he was at RCR, now over at Michael Waltrip. And in MWR, yes, they're a big team. Yes, they have a lot of sponsors, but let's face it, they are not the most successful race team, and that's part of the reason they're closing up shop.
That, and I'm hoping to see a some life out of Clint, out of the team, that's not going to do anything to potentially hold him back. And I hate saying that about a NASCAR team, especially one as well-known as NWR. But I think back to the Richmond fiasco that actually cost them two chase spots. It set Clint very far back, and it eliminated Truex Jr. But also the fiasco, what was it, a few weeks ago when they thought, hey, let's mess with the suspension mounting stuff, and got basically kicked out of the chase, set so far back in points, there was no way he was going to recover unless he won. You know, I really hope nothing like, I know nothing like that's ever going to happen at Stewart Haas, but I want to see that kind of help motivate and boost him up to really see his potential, because I think he can win, and consistently.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be fun watching him and Kevin battle, because I think you're probably going to get more battles between him and Kevin than you are him and Kurt. Kurt's going to be good, but I think when it comes down to the top two that are going to be battling for a championship, I expect Clint Bowyer to come in there and be successful right off the bat, because he is motivated. I honestly look at Clint the way that I look at Kevin when he left RCR. He was like, look, everything's going downhill. I haven't had anything really good in a while. And he got into Stewart Haas Racing, jumped into successful cars, and boom, career took off. So would not be surprised in 2017 when Clint Bowyer jumps in the 14 car that it's right off the bat that he's successful.
Well, and to follow up on that, it's not just when he goes to Stewart Haas, for me anyway. When he goes to H. Scott Motorsports, now I don't expect him to be top five or winning a race with that team. Let's face it, they're not a big team. They've been around a while, but they're not a Hendrick. They're not an RCR. But I do want to see what he can do with and for that team as far as bring them up and improve on what they've already done. You know, similar with Martin Truex Jr. and going to Furniture Row and seeing what they've done this year. I'd like to see that him be able to do that with a smaller team also.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think that's something that's going to be good for H. Scott Motorsports too, is that you get a driver in there with the quality of Clint. You got a guy that's won races. You're getting money coming from 5-Hour Energy because they're going to go with him. So you have the full package. So this will be really something to kind of give Harry Scott a good idea of where his race team is at. So, I mean, nothing against Justin Allgaier. Love the kid, but unfortunately, he's not a championship caliber race car driver. So we'll definitely see what comes on there. Coming up here in a few minutes, Ray Wright from Richard Childress Racing is going to be joining us. And want to remind you that CLNS Radio and the CLNS Beat podcast series and Audibles are giving you a free audio book from the world's largest online library, audible.com. It's a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, sports, and periodicals. Simply go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics to claim your free audio book. Like I said, coming up in minutes, it's going to be Ray Wright. He's going to be calling in on the FanDuel toll-free call-in lines. The CLNS Radio call-in lines are powered by FanDuel. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts. They are paying out over $75 million a week this football season. I love the salary cap format. Pick any players you want for just 1 week. Entry fees start at just $1. Anyone can play. Go to FanDuel.com. Use the CLNS promo code PATRIOTS for free play. Now I love that. I just wish they would have chose a different name, but hey, I can't argue with the people that are paying the bills. We enjoy it. We thank them. And if you are a fantasy football person, make sure you check that out. Get your chance to play some fantasy football, win some money, and then send it to me because I told you about it. Right? Right. So, a couple other things in the news I want to get to. We crowned some champions this past weekend. A new ARCA champion, Grant Enfinger. He picked up his first championship in the ARCA series racing for GMS Motorsports. We're trying to get Grant on the show here In the next couple weeks, obviously he has a lot of obligations. They have their ARCA banquet, championship banquet coming up here in 2 weeks. So hopefully that one, he will be on the show here soon. The K&N East, they crowned their champion this past week, William Byron. He is a up-and-coming driver, driving for Harry Scott, and a former Xfinity Series and Truck Series driver, Justin Marks, owns William Byron's car. And in the K&S West, K&N Pro Series West champion, Chris Eggleston, in one of the closest championship battles that series has seen, picked up the title 4 points over Noah Gregson. So all three of them we are working on trying to have on the show here in the next couple weeks. But like I said, champions, they tend to get a little busy, have a lot of media obligations. But Grant, William, and Chris will be on the show at some point in time, maybe even in the off season, and we will catch up with them. Josh White is going to be on the show here maybe next week. He finished up his rookie ARCA season. Small team, but, you know, one of the things that I absolutely love about the ARCA series is that you get guys that are regular guys and girls, because I walked through that garage and you saw a lot of women in there, I mean, hands just black, working on engines, changing out transmissions. You get families that are in the garage building these race cars and doing everything that they can to put them on the racetrack. Small team. That's the way Josh is in. They had 4 people working on their car at Kentucky a couple weeks ago when I was able to get down there and spend some time with them. So he's going to be calling in probably next week. I think we're going to get him on. We've also got a couple other surprises coming up. We've got a driver that's making their Camping World Truck Series debut at Martinsville here coming up in a couple weeks, and I'm not going to tell you about that because it's still not been officially released and confirmed, but when he's on the show, he'll tell you about it. I think about it, surprise. You're making your first, yeah, exactly. You're making your first Camping World Truck Series start, and you're going to do it at Martinsville. On Halloween,
you know,
by the way. So,
well, I was just going to say, you know, surprisingly, it seems like Martinsville is the track that most truck series drivers make their debut. I think Ben Kennedy, that's where he made his debut, and look what he's doing now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've got some special guests that are coming up in the next couple weeks. A lot of fun to catch up with the guys and girls that are the future of this. And speaking of the guys and girls that are the future, Rev Racing, they wrapped up their combine today out there in Virginia. We had Kaylee Barker on 2 weeks ago to talk about as she got her acceptance, was able to be part of that. Another one, K&N West driver, Hannah Newhouse. She's been on the show before. I think they had 23 drivers that were part of this combine that took part in everything from driving to how they talked to the media and physical fitness. So we are going to get some of them on here in the next couple weeks, talk to the president of Rev Racing as well, and see exactly how that combine went. And once they make their final decision of who is moving on or who ended up winning that combine, and will find themselves in a Rev Racing K&N East car or late model next season. Ray Wright is running a little bit behind. I'm trying to reach out to him, find out what he's got going on. Obviously, if you're going over the wall on pit road, you sometimes run into issues. You may be in meetings. Hard to actually tell. Actually, you know what? Apparently, those meetings may have just ended, because I believe on our FanDuel hotline right now would be one Ray Wright from Richard Childress Racing. Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing great, buddy. How are you doing?
Doing really good. I was just looking at the clock, and I was like, you know what? He's probably still in meetings or even out there probably still doing pit stop practice. I know you got a lot going on as we close in on the end of the year. Let's get right into it. Front tire carrier for the number 27 of Paul Menard. I know, and maybe a lot of the fans don't, but you when you were in college, you played baseball. I'm assuming NASCAR was not really on your radar at that point in time, was it?
Man, I had no idea. about NASCAR when I was at LSU. I remember I was always, I mean, this isn't, you know, a lie. I mean, I was always drawn to Dale Earnhardt. And, you know, it's funny, I work at RCR. I just liked his competitive spirit. I liked, you know, what he brought to the track every, you know, what he brought to competition. And, you know, just who he was. I mean, I didn't care anything about racing. You know, I had the normal stereotypes that everybody else has about NASCAR racing. But Dale Earnhardt, man, I had so much respect for that guy. And so it was pretty cool that I ended up working at RCR and, you know, working for Richard. But that was really all I knew about racing, man. Sometimes, you know, later on when I was out of college, you know, I might watch Daytona or Bristol, you know, something like that. But, you know, that was about it.
Just get a little bit here and there. So what, I mean, when was it that you first really were like, okay, you know what? I think I might actually want to do this.
Oh, boy. I tell you, I met my wife online. You know, I met my wife online when it was, like, now it's cool to meet people online, but I did it when it was, like, really weird, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I take a lot of pride in that, you know? So she was in North Carolina. I was in Maryland. And so I moved, you know, I was just trying to get out of Maryland, so I moved to North Carolina. And I had a job at Forsyth Country Day School, where Austin and Ty Dillon were going to school. And one thing led to another, and RCR was looking for a new person to train the pit crews, right?
Mm.
So, I mean, my goal was actually never to work in racing, you know? I mean, I guess God just, you know, he does what he wants, right? And so I ended up working at RCR, and then when I decided I wanted to be on a pit crew was just, you know, hearing the guys talk and watching what they're going through, and I thought I could do it. So that's when I started to pick up a tire and try to put it on a car.
Now, we see it every week. I mean, you guys go over the wall, slap that tire right on the car, five on, five off, and you're done in 12 seconds. But it's not as easy as it looks. What is the training process that you guys go through to get that down to such a science?
Man, I tell you, it's to make a long answer short. You know, it just takes time. I mean, there are so many things that can happen during a pit stop. People have no idea what's going on around you. If there's a car pitted in behind you, if there's a car pitted in front of you, if it's a caution, if it's a competition caution. Where it's early in the race and everybody's going to be on pit road. You know, everybody's usually on the same lap. You know, if it's going to be a really congested pit road, it's all, I mean, I'm telling you, this sounds cliche and like a bunch of bull, but it's the truth. It's just like baseball, man. It's 90% mental. And the more stops you get under your belt, because from a physical standpoint, man, I'm telling you, there's a lot of people that can do what we do. I mean, I'm not any different than anybody else. But it's just how mentally tough you are, how you can handle obstacles, how you can overcome adversity and still focus. You know, when you're at a Bristol and you've got a car driving right behind your heel and you still got to index your tire, you still got to remember the track bar adjustment or the right side wedge adjustment. You know, that just comes from reps. It comes from practice and it comes from experience on pit road. So, I mean, it's a process, man, that a lot of people don't really understand.
Now, I have alongside of me my co-host here on the show, our social media guy, Mike Reed. Mike, I know you've got a couple questions for Ray.
Yeah, well, just wanted to ask, you know, we saw last weekend a couple of pit road mistakes, most notably with the 78 and the 4, you know, gas can and a loose tire. And I just wanted to ask, you know, when that happens to you, I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but, you know, how do you kind of rebound from that? How does the team kind of come together to correct that mistake?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about mentally tough. I mean, you know pretty much that everybody hates you at that point. You know, you can see people, you know, the facial expressions on the crew chief, the facial expression on the road guys. You know, and you can imagine what the fans at home are feeling. You probably care less about that, but man, it's just part of the job. I mean, like I said, there are so many things that can go wrong. You know what you signed up for. You know if you have a bad week, there's a chance that you're going to get replaced soon. You know, see, when you're on a pit crew, you are the first line of problem. You understand what I'm saying? So if there's a problem on a race team, all right, the pit crews are going to be the first people that get dealt with, all right? So it's like if you're playing chess, we're the pawn. You understand? All right.
Oh, yeah.
So you understand that when you go over the wall and you do something wrong, then you know what the repercussions are possibly going to be Monday or Tuesday. So all those guys on pit road, they're strong-minded individuals, and I'm sure, I don't know if it was the last stop or whatever of the day, I'm sure they came back and they did everything just like clockwork, just like they do. You know, it's all about just that one little mental lapse, you know, it'll cost you. But like I said, man, we all know what we're doing. We're the pawns of the field, and we're good with it, you know?
Yeah, and Ray, I mean, you mentioned something earlier when you were talking about Bristol and trying to be mentally strong, and got cars coming just within inches of your heel as you're trying to put a tire on. What's the closest call that you've had being on pit road?
I tell you, when old John Paul Montana was in the sport, Juan Pablo, when I saw on J-Ski's list that, you know, on his pit crew chart that the old 42 was behind us, you know, that was going to be a pretty tough day because, you know, he was going to clip you. You know, there's those drivers that you know that are going to cut it short, or they're going to cut it real close with you. You know, and it's nothing against those guys. Like a Kurt Busch, man, that guy, he's a wheel man. You respect him because he's awesome at what he does. But, you know, if he's behind you, you better be heads up. You know, he's gonna cut you close. You've got but my biggest little accident on pit road was definitely Homestead when that tire blew up. You know, when we had a whole bunch of debris and crap underneath the car, and
right,
that crap was leaking, and we had that huge explosion on pit road. That was definitely, I mean, especially when it was all done and you looked around and you saw just rotors blown up, you've seen all this stuff, and man, nobody had a scratch on them. That was definitely one of the deals. I mean, I remember, you know, Logano, he's another wheel man. He's an aggressive guy. You know, these guys who you see winning every week, they're so aggressive, you know, and they're going to be aggressive on pit road. They're going to be aggressive on the track. So you have that respect for them, you know. I remember, I mean, Logano, I mean, he cut me real close, but it's what he does. You know, he's a professional race car driver. He's an aggressive guy, and you expect it. You know, it's just one of those things. But Bristol's a tight place, but it's, you know, it comes with the territory.
I'm actually glad you mentioned that explosion. I almost completely forgot that happened to you guys. But wanted to ask you, earlier this year in a race, it was actually the same car. We saw two different pit crew members get hit by actually their driver. And I just wondered, seeing that happen to another team, another crew, you know, does that affect you guys at all, even if it's not on the same team?
No, I don't think it does. I tell you what, you remember when Mark Martin slid through pit road under green flag?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he slid through. I forget if it was Michigan or somewhere.
Right.
But
yes.
that affects you, or it affected me, because when you see a car sliding through the pit stalls at like 100 and some miles an hour, then you think in the back of your head, man, I could have been out there doing a green flag pit stop. So that definitely, that gets in your head, and then you wonder why NASCAR doesn't have some kind of barrier that protects the cars that are going 200 freaking miles an hour from the lonely pawns on pit road that are out there doing their jobs. You know,
I've always wondered about that one at Michigan, especially with that wall too.
Yeah, man, that was tough stuff for sure. And that, I mean, you guys get hit and there's nothing really you can do, man. It's, you know, It's funny how your brain works, though, man. Your brain works so fast, and you process so much information in such a short period of time. Like, you'll think about, you know, when you're going from the right side to the left side, man, I got kids. I'm going to wait on this car to go by. You know?
Now, Ray, I want to get into, I mean, we've really touched on a lot of the work that you do on the dangerous side of the wall, but you guys have a special project with RCR and the pit crews. It's called Pit Stops for Hope. Tell me about this program and what's it does.
Well, okay, Pit Stops for Hope, it was started in May of 2013. We found out, you know, pit crew guys, we found out that, you know, North Carolina is such a, we've got such a high rate of childhood hunger. Believe me, man, one in every four kids in our state are hungry. And so Pit Stops for Hope was started to help these kids. You know, NASCAR is such a big stage. We can do so much. We can get awareness out. That's the problem. A lot of people live in these states where child hunger is so great. They don't even know it because, you know, you figure it's America, nobody's hungry. Well, we started this deal, like I said, to raise awareness and to raise money. And that's what we've done so far, man. We're trying to continue our work. We're getting in the school systems, and we're trying to make a change in these kids' lives. You know, we turn on the news, and your mind gets blown when you see these acts of crime. And but, man, we got to look in the mirror. We got to take ownership of the people we live with and the people we are around. I mean, kids can't help how they're brought up. Kids can't help if their parents leave them. Kids can't help if their parents don't care about them. And that's where we got to step up, and we got to take ownership of these kids, and we got to try and help them any way we can.
Now, how can race fans be a part of this? I know that you guys raise a lot of money each weekend at the track. If the fans are at the track or if they're not and they want to help support this cause, how can they do that?
Okay, man, they can go to pitstopsforhope.org. They can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at pitstopsforhope. And, of course, we're on Facebook, pitstopsforhope. And, I mean, like you said, man, I'm glad you brought that up. We're, you know, before the race on pit road, we sell used, I mean, RCR, Richard supports us. He loves what we do. He lets us sell all the stuff we're not going to use, man. I mean, we sell used lug nuts. We sell used studs. You know, we have crew shirts that we can't wear anymore, so we sell them. And people eat it up. And every bit of that goes to Salvation Army. It goes to Second Harvest Food Bank. And we've actually donated $6,000 since August 6th to local teachers, because our teachers in North Carolina are amongst the worst paid teachers in America. So we've
really?
Got the highest percentage.
Wow.
We've got the highest percentage of child hunger in North Carolina. We've got the worst paid teachers in North Carolina. So it's not really saying a lot for our youth and what we're trying to do there. But we're going to step up, and you know, we do giveaways. We're going to do a giveaway on Twitter at the end of the week. And we love our followers. We're so happy to have them. And, man, awareness is a big deal. And, you know, this is America. And if you take pride in America, then you better take pride in the youth instead of just judging and talking bad about them. Man, let's help them out. Let's change this. Let's change the course of this ship.
Well, we can only hope that. We can only hope that message actually gets across, because you know, if it's happening in North Carolina, it's happening in a lot of other places. And I mean, you guys are out 36 weeks out of the year, you're in different places around the country, and I'm sure you see a lot of it. But I will make sure that we push the Twitter and the website. And you said there's a giveaway coming up this week. We'll get that on our Facebook page and make sure that's mentioned as well, because that's a great thing that you guys are doing.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on the show. And like I said, I just appreciate, you know, like you said, the awareness is such a big deal. You live in a state and you don't even know, but I mean, 20 minutes from your house, there's chances are there's a hungry kid somewhere.
Right. Well, Ray, I appreciate you taking some time out of your night. I know you guys got a busy weekend coming up at Talladega. Best of luck to you, and we will talk to you later down the road.
Hey, anytime, buddy. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Ray.
See you next.
Ray Wright from the number 27 carries the tires, goes over the wall, and is out there in harm's way to help get Paul Menard back out on the racetrack as quickly as possible. And those RCR guys, they get it done, and they get it done quick. And it's amazing to watch those guys work. A lot of people tune in to watch the cars out on the track. I personally, anytime I'm at the racetrack, love standing there in the pit boxes, watching these guys come in. Car just comes sliding in, brakes locked up for two pit stalls, and then stops right in front of them. 12 seconds later, they're back out on the racetrack. So he's definitely one of the best out there, been doing it for a while. So appreciate Ray Wright taking some time out of a busy schedule to join us here on Race Talk Live on the FanDuel Hotline. So, Mike, we got a few minutes left here, and we've still got some other news, actually, that we still have to touch on before we get into our fantasy picks. NASCAR did some testing at Kentucky on the new rules package. Greg Stucker, director of race tire sales for Goodyear, said at Kansas that they tested the low downforce at Michigan and that they in 2014, and that they were back up there working and making adjustments. So they've got a good idea of a tire that they're going to be bringing up there, because apparently the speeds are picking up, and I didn't think that was possible.
No, I wouldn't think that was possible. If you think about it, last year, you know, we had high horsepower, and we kind of lowered the downforce a little bit. This year, we lowered the horsepower and raised the downforce. We actually almost had faster laps this year than we did last year, and we were supposed to be slowing the cars down. So I thought that part was really kind of comical. I don't know what else they could do to slow these cars down. You certainly can't put a four-cylinder in there and say, here you go, you know, go for it. And I'm not sure slower is better, you know. That's one thing the drivers love. It's one thing the fans love, is having that power and be able to go, you know, as fast as possible. Obviously, we don't want to see a scenario like Austin Dillon and the catch fence ever again.
Right.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but whenever you make a change to a car, something can and will always happen. That is racing rule 101. Whatever can happen is going to happen. And it's usually something you never even thought of. Even if you checked everything off the list that is make it as safe as possible, you know, some stuff you just cannot fathom would happen. And that, I think, was definitely one of them. But I don't know. I still say I am so for this package we're using next year. I wish we made a few changes to the plate aero package. Because I still say that one has too much downforce, and it kind of shows with the kind of racing we're going to see on Sunday, which you and I have talked about. I don't know if we have enough time to talk about it. We need a new clock. but, you know, I'm excited for what we got next year.
Right. And one of the other things that you mentioned, obviously we're heading to Talladega this weekend. NASCAR, Steve O'Donnell, NASCAR's Executive Vice President, Chief Racing Development Officer, announced this week that they are making a change to the green, white, checkered policy, and it's only for Talladega this week. They are going from 3 green, white, checkered attempts down to 1. So they say it's in the, all in the best interest of safety. They say they take serious responsibility of balancing exciting finishes and safety. They just don't want to have those big crashes, and they're seeing more and more of those as they go to the 3 green, white, checkered. In fact, 4 out of the last 7 races at Talladega have finished with multi-car crashes in a multiple green, white, checkered attempt. So hopefully one's going to change it. The guys are going to get there and be like, look, we've only got one chance at this, but you've only got one chance at it. You got to get it done quickly. I don't know if that's going to eliminate the big wreck. I don't think anything will. I've always been one that was against green, white, checkered finishes at Talladega, but we'll see what happens. Maybe they just stay single file the entire race. Nobody gets out and passes, and we don't need a green, white, checkered finish anyways, because that's a worst case scenario, and I'm afraid it's really going to happen. But new rule coming for this weekend.
And I think it's funny when you say the worst possible scenario is we don't have an accident.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of funny to say that, but I mean, I don't want the big crash. I mean, because you really don't want to see fans' favorite drivers get eliminated from contention from a championship because of somebody else's mistake in a pack of four wide racing. I've said it over and over. I will continue to say it. I have been against pack racing. Obviously, I thought it was kind of cool up until they were able to figure out the tandem style racing. I loved tandem racing. I am one of the few. I am in the minority. I know that. But you didn't see 18, 20 cars torn up in a big wreck when they were racing that way. So one guy gets spun out, maybe two or three at the most. I don't like to see millions and millions of dollars worth of race cars torn up because fans want to see all 43 cars under a blanket a half a second apart. Not me.
And I'm on the flip side with you. I was not a fan of tandem racing. I'm in the majority. I am a fan of pack racing, but only I liked when we had two rows that could run side by side, no problem. I'm not a fan of when we're four wide for about 20 cars deep because no one moves. It's just one blob of cars, and that's when things go wrong. But I'm definitely not a fan of this single file racing that we have, and I really hope we don't see what we saw earlier this year at Talladega when Dale Jr. got his win. You know, congratulations, Jr., getting your win. But I hate seeing that single file race. And we do see it, you know, not just this year, but we have seen that in the past. I just, with everything that's on the line this, and I'll get into that when we make our picks, but with everything that's going on with this chase and this race, I don't think we're going to have that problem. I hope we don't have that problem.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to put it is I hope. But speaking of picks, last week you had Kevin Harvick, obviously had his pit road penalty, gas can left the box, finished 16th. I was lucky enough not to curse a driver for the first time in the chase. I picked Brad Keselowski. He had a solid ninth place finish. So that will allow me to go in and, as we fire up the blender, I don't have my blender noise. I tried, but apparently the blender has blown a motor. Just stick it in the rest of the scrap at Talladega. But as we head off to Talladega, it's basically pretty much what my pick is going to be. I really don't know. You have such a hard time looking at these packs and trying to figure out who's going to finish. I mean, I remember the eight cars coming across the start-finish line within a tenth of a second, two by two, four wide, and you didn't know who finished until they took the photo finish. I'm just basically going to go out and grab somebody, and I am going to say Denny Hamlin scores at Talladega.
Son of a monkey! you're kidding. Out of everybody, that is the one person I thought we would not fight over. Wow.
You know, that's the first time this year since we've been doing this show. This is the first time that we've done that. Got 90 seconds left. Let's get your pick in.
Oh, crap. See, this is the scenario we've got. We've got two drivers that have to win. Fortunately, those two drivers, Matt Kenseth and Dale Jr., are very good plate racers. Dale Jr.'s won two of the last three this year. I'd almost be a fool not to go with him. I guess now I have no choice. You took mine. All right, I'm going with Dale Jr. I'm hesitant on that one, but I'm going with Dale Jr. Statistically, stat guy, I have to pick him.
Yep, and that's I was thinking about going that way, but I couldn't go with Junior because, I mean, it's a pressure situation, going to be hard to really do anything with that. Want to give out, as we were talking to Ray Wright earlier from RCR, Richard Childress Racing announced longtime crew chief Gil Martin has been moved up to the competition director for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, effective immediately. Gil has been in this role before with RCR, so congratulations to him. No longer out there on pit road. So it's a big move for Gil Martin and make sure everything's at home. So final 30 seconds, Mike, obviously appreciate everything that you bring to the show again this week. Great stuff. Some good questions for Ray. And we want to thank Ray Wright from RCR for joining us. This is Steve Conley, Mike Reed. We will see you back here next Wednesday night for another edition of Race Talk Live, founded by Kate Moss.